On today's BizNews briefing, Trump tariffs set for 1 August plus a BRICS surcharge, the proposed US bill that's gone under the SA radar. Mkhwanazi opens Pandora's box, but how will President Ramaphosa respond? Elon Musk goes political again, and US markets continue to rise. So what's next? Stay tuned. It's Tuesday, the 8th of July. I'm Stuart Lohmann. Why is South Africa being singled out by the US as one of 14 countries to be hit by the highest level of tariffs? Despite President Ramaphosa assuring South Africans the White House meeting was a success. Joel Pollack spoke to BizNews editor Alec Hogg.
And Ramaphosa didn't come with any sort of a plan or any kind of compromises. You and I had spoken for many weeks about the kinds of compromise that the administration wanted to see. None of that was on the table. And then adding insult to injury, there is the fact that South Africa sided with Iran in the recent 12-day war. And although some people in the South African government made some positive noises about peace in the Middle East or about caring about civilians on both sides, the fact is that the deputy foreign minister went to the Iranian embassy in Pretoria and signed a book of condolence after the war, when the United States had attacked the nuclear sites of the Iranian regime and when the Iranian regime had attacked civilians in Israel with hundreds of missiles. So clearly the South Africans were on Iran's side, and that did not go unnoticed by the administration. So in addition to announcing the 30% duty, Trump said that countries that follow the anti-American policies of the BRICS alliance will face an additional 10% tariff. So that's where we are. There was nothing forthcoming from the South African government in terms of compromise, and so there is a 30%, perhaps 40% tariff.
What is President Trump wanting to achieve with South Africa, given this hardline attitude of the ANC and the fact that the people of South Africa are going to be hurt by this? What's his intention here? Or has he even thought that far, given that it's such a small little blip on the radar of the US's trade operations?
Well, I think he's simply trying to achieve a much better trade situation, one in which the South African government lowers non-tariff and tariff barriers to trade. We've spoken at length about some of the non-tariff barriers, like BEE policies, like the land policies that the government has undertaken this year with the signing of the Expropriation Act and so forth. I think Trump has made it pretty clear what he wants. And South Africa, for some reason, has not made any move in his direction. So the result is a higher tariff. And if you look at other countries, the other 13 facing stiff tariff increases, these are countries that haven't taken the threat of tariff increases seriously enough.
You can watch the full interview on BizNews TV on YouTube. Staying in the US, a bill that proposes an aid freeze over South Africa's anti-Israel actions has gone under the SA radar. It targets officials with sanctions under the Global Magnitsky Act and aims to reshape SA's foreign policy through financial pressure. My colleague Kerry Lanahang reports.
On the 17th of June 2025, Congressman Greg Stube introduced House Resolution 4051. The Addressing Hostile and Anti-Semitic Conduct by the Republic of South Africa Act of 2025. The bill, currently under consideration by the House Committees on Foreign Affairs and Judiciary, proposes a set of punitive measures in response to what it characterizes as sustained diplomatic and legal hostilities by South Africa against Israel and the global Jewish community. The bill asserts that the South African government has engaged in repeated misuse of international legal mechanisms to unfairly target Israel, allegedly advancing politically motivated and anti-Semitic narratives under the guise of international law. It also accuses South Africa of aligning with authoritarian regimes and actors deemed hostile to US interests. Citing these developments, the bill calls for the US withholding direct financial assistance to South Africa unless certain conditions are met. If enacted, H.R. 4051 could significantly alter the US-South African bilateral relationship, particularly by tying financial and diplomatic engagement to South Africa's stance on Israel and its use of international legal forums. The bill reflects growing congressional frustration with South Africa's global advocacy against Israeli policies, particularly at forums like the International Court of Justice. It also underscores the US legislators' broader strategy of leveraging aid and sanctions to influence foreign policy alignment. The bill's strong language and sweeping scope suggest it is more than symbolic. Should it advance, it may have tangible repercussions on South Africa's foreign policy posture, aid-dependent sectors, and broader diplomatic relations with Washington.
The full article is available on BizNews Premium. Now Tesla CEO Elon Musk wants to create a new third political party called the America Party. Will this party benefit anyone, and more importantly for shareholders, continue the rift between Musk and President Trump? Bloomberg reports.
The president described this as ridiculous. Third parties, he says, have never worked. And arguably the facts stand behind him on that. But can it work when you happen to be the wealthiest man on planet Earth?
Well, it's certainly money makes a difference in politics, but it isn't always the outcome, right? We've had lots of very wealthy individuals run for office, fund initiatives like this, and by and large, it doesn't go well. And so money on its own is not the issue. If he's going to go and try and recruit people to run in primaries against Republicans or Democrats who voted for this spending package, are they going to run as Democrats and Republicans, or are they going to run as America Party individuals? I mean, there's so many things that we don't know about this current initiative. But look, Trump is right about one thing. We're a two-party system. Usually the fights are within the party. Those are the fun ones. And they resolve themselves and we go forward. The idea that just money is going to make a difference is, I'd bet against it.
Jeannie, you invoked Ross Perot earlier today. Your thoughts on whether this even gets out of the blocks? Elon Musk could learn a lot in starting a political party. And I wonder, who does it actually help? Democrats, possibly, by primarying these Republican candidates?
It could. And certainly Democrats are hoping that, you know, he does something similar to what we've seen in the past. So something like a Ross Perot. You know, we've seen third parties be able to eat away. He could also be in a position, if he did build this party in 2028 in particular, to cross endorse a candidate. But that is a long way off. And number one, I'm hoping that Elon Musk is not making this decision based on an ex poll that he seems to have done, which said a lot of people want it. So I hope he is hiring some good pollsters to go out there and see if there is really a market for this thing. And then number two, you got to do the hard work of setting it up. And Donald Trump is absolutely right. That's the reason he didn't run on a third party as we look back to like 2012, 2016, because they seldom work. They're usually headed by an individual, whether it's Henry Ford or Ross Perot or Pat Buchanan, and they are successful as long as that person is heading it and able to run. Once they go away, the party goes away. And Elon Musk, of course, can't run for president. He can run for something else.
Well, that's true, having been born in South Africa. Rick, when we consider this notion that third parties never really be able to seem to gain a footing, though they can be a disruptive factor, we saw in 2024, the American electorate broadly hated their choices, at least when it was President Biden running against Donald Trump. They wanted another option. Is there political appetite for another option, even if it, you can't make it a political reality because of how entrenched the two-party system is?
Yeah, arguably the highest growth party in America is the Independent Party. Yeah. People tend to lose faith in elections if you're a Democrat or a Republican. And sure, there's always a level of dislike for a party's choice. But at the end of the day, most of those independents take a side, right? And they look at the candidates that are available on their ballot in their states, and they say, you know what, I'm going to go with this Republican or I'm going to go with that Democrat. And rarely does a independent candidate, and they're always on the ballot, garner anything that you would be considered substantial. And the point Jeannie makes, Ross Perot actually decided the outcome of an election. Yeah. So unintended consequences are usually what happens in this case.
Right. At Sun Exchange, we make going solar simple, profitable, and completely risk-free. Join over 100 satisfied South African customers already enjoying the benefits of risk-free solar. Start saving today. Visit sunexchange.com and join the solar revolution.
Right now, you can get the cheapest Forex rate around, right here, on Shift. Pay less for your dollars, pounds, and euros here, and get to shop more here, and do more here, and enjoy more ooh-la-la here. Shift also lets you trade and transfer currencies, and buy shares in the world's best companies. It all happens right here, on Shift. You won't find a cheaper Forex rate anywhere else, no matter where you bank. Download the Shift app today.
The DA's Ian Cameron has slammed Police Minister Mchunu and Deputy Sibiya after backing Mkhwanazi's bombshell claims as a national security crisis, demanding Ramaphosa's urgent action. He spoke to my colleague, Chris Stain.
As you've just said, there is huge public support for the KZN Provincial Commissioner, and there has been for a long time. I mean, you just have to read the comments on X. And as you now say, all political parties in parliament are also uniting behind him now.
Yeah, I haven't picked up anyone that didn't, apart from Fikile Mbalula last night on the news. Look, you know, Chris, it's important, and I must say this, that to me, due process and the rule of law, they're absolutely critical. It shouldn't be undermined. And I was grappling with this yesterday because it felt to me like Mkhwanazi totally broke rank. And I mean, he literally jumped outside of the bureaucratic process. But that being said, I was listening to Mbalula last night and reading comments, and I thought to myself that, wait a minute, we're all going on about obeying the bureaucratic process, but this very bureaucratic process, despite exhausting many of the avenues we have done so far, never actually protected any form of integrity of the state or any institution mentioned. I mean, Mbalula now says, no, people must, they must abide by the bureaucratic process. And even though I actually agree to a large extent, what has that brought us regarding corruption in the country? Now, let's be very careful that we don't encourage some kind of a coup d'etat, because that's also not a good thing. But, if let's humor me for a second, if Mkhwanazi went and he just purely opened a case and then he hoped for better days, I can guarantee you nothing would have happened. I mean, almost everyone implicated in state capture are still somehow involved in the state. Many of them cabinet ministers, some of them chairperson of portfolio committees. Nothing happened with them. But my goodness, if you don't get the relevant permission to travel abroad, then you're sacked. So there's just a complete double standard in approach. I think that what happened yesterday was also a sign of significant frustration. I also found it interesting how Mkhwanazi made a very clear message to rally public support and the private sector. So it indicated to me, and maybe I'm just being dramatic about it, but it indicated to me that he's actually confirming that he already has a lot of support from those sectors. Yesterday's press conference was meticulously planned. That wasn't an ad hoc type of press conference. From the uniforms to the conduct, the senior members sitting around him, many of them brigadiers, major generals, etc., that wasn't some kind of an ad hoc lose my temper type of press conference. It was meticulously planned. And therefore, I still can't help but wonder what this evidence looks like, because I can't think that they would have taken the risk if there isn't something of substance behind it.
The full interview is available on BizNews TV, on YouTube, and a call to non-subscribers. You can subscribe to the channel just below. Now, Cameron has called for President Ramaphosa's urgent action. Here is the president responding to Mkhwanazi's claims on the sidelines of the BRICS conference in Brazil.
On the issue of the announcement, or better still, what the commissioner of police commissioner of KZN General Mkhwanazi said, I was not aware of it, that it was coming. And obviously it is a matter that I will be dealing with when I get home. I will need to look at it more closely and have a thoroughgoing discussion with a number of people. And thereafter, there will be a clear way forward. This is not a matter that we should not give attention to. It is a serious matter. It has to do with the security of our people, but it also has to do with our adherence to the rule of law. The police play a critical role in enhancing the rule of law, the safety of South Africans, and that those who have done wrong should be dealt with, and should be dealt with thoroughly in terms of our constitution and our laws. So this matter is going to be addressed.
I'm sure South Africans will agree that we don't need another family meeting or dialogue. Now shifting focus to markets, those with their toes in the US must be smiling broadly. This as markets touch record levels. But what's next? The Financial Times reports.
U.S. stocks are on fire after a rough start to the year. The S&P 500 is up more than 20% since mid-April and keeps hitting new highs. But here's the question. Is this a real rally or is it just an overcorrection? We asked Aidan Ryder what he thinks is going on. He's co-host of the FT's Unhedged podcast. Aidan, give me the bullish view.
Well, the optimistic take is that this is still a strong economy. Jobs numbers keep coming in above expectation. Inflation is hot, but still sort of coming down. It looks like this economy is as resilient as one could hope in the face of so much uncertainty from the Trump administration and from the potential reordering of global markets after Liberation Day.
And what is the pessimist's view?
The pessimistic reading is that this is an overcorrection. After the huge dip in April, and as Trump has sort of pulled back a bunch of these policies, investors might be thinking that, you know what, I don't think these things are going to last, or I actually was on the wrong side of the trade when the market went down last time. I'm not going to be caught on the wrong side this time. And when you look at this market, it looks like a risk-on market, meaning that people are going for potentially more risky strategies, which is what we had seen in kind of all of the previous good runs of the past 2 years. Big tech is leading this recovery. You have high volatility strategies like speculative tech investments that you don't really know how they're going to pay out, also doing particularly well. At the same time, you have really tight credit spreads, which means that corporate debt is viewed as fairly safe compared to treasuries and other assets.
So these are two really different interpretations of what's going on in the stock market, and they have very different consequences for investors. I mean, depending on what camp they're in.
I mean, it is absolutely true that economic growth and a lot of the economic indicators we look for in stress have been surprising to the upside. So, you know, if it's the optimistic scenario, there's reason to believe that this will continue and that the underlying things in the economy are good. The difference of the pessimistic and optimistic scenario, however, is once you have something to the downside, whether that's economic growth surprise or an inflation surprise, you could see on the overcorrecting side a huge pullback as people try to reproportion their portfolio to properly account for the real risks in the economy. We should note that there's still a ton of uncertainty about what tariffs will mean, about what global reordering of trade and finance will mean for this market, and we don't have enough information to know how things will land.
What does all this tell us about investing during Donald Trump's second term?
I mean, uncertainty is the main word. We don't know the direction of policy. We don't know what the actual outcomes of tariffs and other measures will be. So investors just have to take bets, right? Are we going to really believe in a buoyant economy and that's going to continue? Or are we just praying and hoping the right side of the next trade?
Aidan Ryder is a financial reporter at the FT. He also co-hosts the Unhedged podcast.
I'm constantly reminded that hope is not a strategy when investing. And that's it for today's show. A big thanks to the BizNews production team. From me, Stuart Lohmann. Until next time.